Hello and welcome to another episode of Virtual Legality. I'm your host, Richard Hoag, managing member of the Hoag Law Business Law Firm of Northville, Michigan. But today we're neither going to talk about business nor law. Not really. We're going to walk the tightrope between corporate messaging and social media statements to some extent. But today we're doing an episode that I like to call a Virtual Legality Extra, meaning that we're not going to have a ton of business or legal content in this video. Instead, we're going to be talking about something that I think is important, but is ultimately commentary based. Now, before we get started, I do want to point out it's Patreon support week here on the channel. If you do enjoy the content that we do on this channel, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We will very shortly have another way to support us if you're holding out for a different platform to use. But if you do check out that Patreon, we've got a tier that allows you to support an episode of this series. And today we give special thanks to Opal Studded Dagger and their multiple months of support for the channel. We can't do it without viewers like Opal and listeners slash viewers like you. Thank you so much, Opal Studded Dagger. Now, as I said, today we're going to be talking about something a little bit more commentary focused, a little less legal focused, and that is really the nature of communications in the gaming industry. As you could probably tell, I love video gaming. I have my whole life. I love software. I love technology. I love a lot of industries. But at the end of the day, video gaming holds my heart. And it is with some sadness that I am regularly reporting on issues of what I would describe as maturity in the industry. Now, obviously, in entertainment fields, video gaming is the youngest stepson, right? They are the sibling that is still growing up and still becoming more and more mature in the way that they communicate with everybody, the way that they actually handle their business in public and behind closed doors. Movies have had a lot longer to deal with these issues, and we see movies and television and other entertainment sources have issues still, even though they've been around a lot longer than video gaming. So this isn't a comparison, this isn't a video or a commentary that is designed solely to denigrate the industry, but to point out that there's still a lot of growing to be done, and that overall, social media and events and influencers and Patreon-supported channels, he says ironically, seem to have led us in the video game industry, or just those interested in video games, into a very odd position. So this episode is about Elden Ring, as you saw on the first screen, but it's also about more than that. If you haven't been on social media, good for you, but over the last few days, there's been what we might refer to as discourse around Elden Ring and the user experience that a player gets when playing Elden Ring. Now that's important because Elden Ring is the most universally acclaimed video game in quite some time. And yet, we actually saw people engaged in the gaming industry directly as developers impugn Elden Ring's good name. And I'm pulling this story from a site called MP First. I apologize for the various pop-up ads. I don't like to use ad block. I know some of you will mention that in the comments here, but they do have some things popping up. I'll try to hit them down like a game of whack-a-mole if they do pop up in front of our screen. While Elden Ring seems to be one of the most critically acclaimed games in recent memory, currently sitting at the very impressive 97 overall on Metacritic, it seems some video game developers aren't impressed with From Software's latest action RPG. Over on Twitter, and that should already set you off, if you start a paragraph with that, you know something bad is coming. Former Battlefield 2042 dev and now current UX director at Ubisoft, Ahmed Salama, whose Twitter profile is now locked, pointed out that Elden Ring snagging a 97 average on Metacritic is proof that game critics don't give a crap about UX. That's the user experience. In the same tweet, Nix's Software, now a first-party Sony studio, dev Rebecca Fernandez O'Shea and senior quest designer of Horizon Forbidden West, Blake Rebuchet, also Twitter profile locked, threw shade by mentioning the faulting of the game's PC graphics, stability and performance, and even its quest design. And you see these tweets, that's one of the reasons I'm using this article, is these were all pulled up and we can share them with you in summary form here. We have Ahmed Salama, formerly of Battlefield 2042, Electronic Arts, now with Ubisoft. The fact that Elden Ring scored a 97 Metacritic is proof that reviewers don't give a flaming poop about game UX. Evocative. My life is a lie. Now, with that last line, I think a generous reading of what's being said there is that this is effectively a little bit of Twitter snark and he's reflecting on what he provides to gaming. Obviously, with a pedigree from Battlefield 2042, the user experience being one of the things that people are complaining about, collecting signatures to actually have that game refunded, restored, changed, Electronic Arts making statements about how bad it is and everything else that they want to change about it. It didn't put him in a great position to get this message out there, or most certainly for this kind of message to go viral. Similarly, Rebecca Fernandez-O'Shea saying, nor PC graphics, stability, and performance, apparently. And then finally, Horizon Forbidden Blake, nor quest design. So everything that the summary said is being commented on by game developers, by competing game developers that are interested in the same industry. And you really don't see this kind of snarking, this kind of attack in most places, even on the hellscape that is Twitter and social media generally. If you go into law Twitter, for instance, a bunch of lawyers talking about random stuff that lawyers like to talk about, you generally won't see this kind of sniping. You do see it occasionally, but you will see a commiseration about the practice of law or the various other things that go into it, because people in general are more alike than they're different on these kinds of things, and this kind of look is bad. The reason I make this video, the reason I'm talking to you all about it, is because this, which isn't corporate messaging, it is messaging from people in your corporation, is reflecting poorly on the industry and its interactions on the whole. You can 1,000% have criticisms of Elden Ring. In fact, I'm going to talk to you about some of mine in just a minute, but presenting it in this way makes you look catty, makes you look like you're wanting to attack the most critically acclaimed game in a long time because it's not your game. And as a result, the internet tends to not like these things, but it most importantly doesn't look good for you, doesn't look good for your employer. And unfortunately, in 2022, this is the kind of stuff that can actually get you fired, depending on how viral it gets and what kind of reaction it actually engenders. Because when we talk about these kinds of things, if it lowers the goodwill of your employer or somebody related to your employer, that's exactly how you find yourself in, well, a virtual legality. But more importantly than here, in the Twitter spotlight and having those companies have to react to that. This continues on. He says, Elden Ring's UX is so bad that I can only imagine FromSoft's devs smoking at their desks and using CRT monitors, meaning that they are old school. That for whatever reason, this individual thinks that Elden Ring and its experience hasn't advanced from way back in the day when you were smoking in your office and you were using CRT monitors in order to evaluate your work. Now, if somebody comes on Twitter and reads him a bit of his own snark, that happened a lot when these tweets went up. But the purpose of this video is to really comment on the poor reflection that that has. And more specifically, that doing this not only looks bad for your employer, looks bad for you, looks bad for the gaming industry on the whole, it also results in these kinds of counter volleys that make the entire gaming audience look a little bad and look a little catty themselves, right? If we go and we look at Reddit, somebody gets involved in this quote-unquote discourse and puts together what Ubisoft would have this look like, remembering that the initial instigator of this discourse, this commentary, was and is a Ubisoft user experience developer. Now, there's a couple of things happening here. First of all, it's very cute. It does look a lot like what we see in video gaming, so that makes it viral, that everybody can understand that this is at least somewhat funny, because we've all seen the mini map and the question marks and them presented in the map and the compass and message of the day and all the rest of this stuff. It also belies the point that's being made in the commentary a little bit. And this is what happens when you're snarky, when you're catty, when you're attacking instead of constructive, which is that user experience isn't quite the same as user interface, right? The experience for Elden Ring is impacted by some of the old school things that Elden Ring does in its menu. That's honestly the truth. Having to go into a separate menu, not getting comparisons when you buy weapons from various vendors, doing all these things that really could be cleaned up and smoothed out without functionally changing the game at all, is a legitimate commentary on this product. And it's a commentary that realistically isn't reflected in any of these reviews. Right, I promised you that I would talk about my complaints a little bit, but before we do that, I want to point out that if you go and you look at OpenCritic or Metacritic or wherever else you like to find your reviews, basically there are no issues reflected by anyone who comments on this for a long period of time. You can go to the very bottom of this list and find a few reviews that fall under that 9 threshold. But for the most part, everybody is saying the game, the content, the world, what you're actually playing is great, And at that point, I think it's justified to say game reviewers on the whole seem to ignore a whole lot of things if they like the core of the experience, the underlying stuff, right? Tens out of tens, fives out of fives. And no, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that a 10 out of 10 means perfection. It obviously doesn't. The human experience is not one where we can create perfection out of our art, but you don't really see significant issues reflected in the game. Now, I have a couple of comments. You know, I started playing it right after Horizon. I said, hey, there's some real performance issues here. Digital Foundry came out with a clip showing these performance issues, and some people might not be bothered by them, and that's totally fine, but others will be. It really flips and flops between 60 frames and something significantly less on my Xbox Series X. And I wound up tweeting out. I say, hey, looks like reviewers weren't put off by some pretty significant technical aspects of Elden Ring. And following up with, on Series X, Elden Ring's frame rate is all over the place. And God help you if it rains. Loads are long, but it's not like you die a lot. And the overall image quality is not great. And I'm hopeful for some patches on what seems to be a cool game. And now, I hopefully am presenting that pretty constructively. But immediately in my comments and DMs and likes and whatnot, you had people effectively defending Elden Ring because gamers get a little defensive about products, especially when they're told by everybody on God's green earth that it is effectively as near to perfect as humans can make in this space. But I do think that there are reasonable complaints to level at a game like this. And unfortunately, they're baked in to the nature of a From Software game. You're basically accepting some of the quirks and weirdness in either user interface or user experience that comes with that, and that's totally okay. But as an industry itself, I'm not sure that the reviewers are accurately reflecting that this is very much not a game for everyone. That those quirks, whether it's difficulty, user interface, user experience, lack of hand-holding, however you want to describe it on the internet, is not going to be for everybody in a very significant way. And what you would want to see from a well-functioning review system, in my opinion, everything in a Virtual Legality Extra is my opinion, of course, is a reflection of the number of folks that actually it's not going to work for. And I have to be honest with you. I like Elden Ring, but I have all sorts of issues with it and its flow and everything else. And I don't think that, you know, fully 95% of all reviewers are reflective of 95% of players and whether or not this game will work for them. So in terms of functionality, you've got this problem, which leads to this problem. And I think this is by far the worst, right? When we talk about developers and people actually engaged in the industry trying to take down others, that's bad. That's a level of emotionality we shouldn't see in a fully functional professional industry. But I do think it's indicative of symptoms that lead to that kind of behavior. So I think this is wrong. I think it is silly. I don't think they should have done it. I don't think that it reflects well on the gaming industry. That's the main message. But I do understand how they get there when it doesn't look like apparently what they do for a living matters. If the art is nice enough, or if that boss is cool enough. And I can certainly understand venting on a social media website with that. Wouldn't recommend it if you came to me and asked, hey, should I post this? And I think it looks bad for a lot of folks, but I do think we have a fundamentally broken system for evaluating these types of things when we put forth the people that already like them, already like the quirks, even if maybe 8 out of 10 people wouldn't like the quirks that every specific reviewer of this From Software game does like. For the record, by the way, I enjoy Elden Ring. It would probably be something like an 8 out of 10 for me, but it's not reflective of the greatest game of all time, in my personal opinion. And I do think you get some of this venting because people have dedicated their livelihoods to quest design and user interface and user experience and various other things, and they don't see the actual reviewers covering much of any of that. And frankly, I agree in certain respects, certainly technically, and with performance on the Series X more specifically. But this isn't the only time this kind of thing has happened, right? The other aspect of this is the Ubisoft of it all, right? Players watching this happen in real time on Twitter and in social media did put together this Reddit post, did share these things around, and Ubisoft defended itself in a way that I also think is pretty fair. Here's Marcel Hatam @com_Raven on Twitter, who is responding to Jason Schreier, of all people, sharing around that Reddit image. Again, Jason Schreier, ostensibly a fair-minded journalist for Bloomberg, of all places, the real legacy media, putting that image out, which I unfortunately can't show you because I remain blocked by Mr. Schreier, but he's putting that image out in a way that maybe is just funny, but maybe is inappropriate for kind of diving on with what is an increasingly catty, upset, emotional argument within the industry that he ostensibly covers. And you have Marcel at Ubisoft say, effectively, this makes me wonder if players and press actually realize that for many years now, AC has allowed you to turn pretty much everything in the UI off. If your game looks like this, and he's referring to this image, and it's mostly a Ubisoft kind of look to it, then it's because you want it to. Giving players options to customize their experience is good. Shout out to everyone who has clearly never played Odyssey or Valhalla and seen that the dialogue gives plenty of hints to find stuff, but still felt the need to reply with, but it would be impossible to play those games with turned off UI. Handy fact for anyone wanting to make the same comment yet again, but it is hidden. No, it's the first choice when starting a game. But the design, the menu literally says Explorer mode is the recommended way to play. And lol, you work for Ubisoft. Ubi sucks. And certainly that's an aspect of all this. We talk about console warriors, but very quickly in the last 2 years or 3 years, the length of time that virtual legality has been in existence, it's not just console warriors, it's warriors of all stripes. It's warriors against Ubisoft. It's warriors against whatever the main scandalous article is about one of these developers, development houses, leaders, whatever it might be, some of which is justified, but much of which strikes me as very immature and very missing the point of what should be the critiques of how gaming is sold. And we see that with a story that happened just a little bit earlier than all this. This is a Kotaku article about the DICE Awards entitled Gaming Awards Show Host Gets on Stage, Says F Bobby Kotick, a little bit more language there in the headline itself. And Gaming Awards Show Host, in this case, of course, is Game Over Greggy, Greg Miller from Kinda Funny Games, who, in the course of presenting the opening statements, the jokes, I guess, at the start of the DICE Awards, which is a fairly prestigious awards ceremony for the video game industry, a lot of industry luminaries there, and it's reported on as an official award show, maybe even to more of an extent than the Game Awards in December of each year, decided to go out with this sequence to really castigate Activision, but not just Activision, specifically Bobby Kotick. Or as Kotaku reports, earlier in the day, before the event unfolded, Kinda Funny co-founder and industry hype man Greg Miller stated on Twitter he would use his airtime in front of the industry's top developers to make enemies. They continue. After joking about Cyberpunk 2077, Metroid Dread, and NFTs, Miller said, F Bobby Kotick, to claps and cheers from the audience. And me censoring that in this context is actually its own kind of joke, because the joke as presented by him is actually saying, I'm only going to say F Bobby Kotick, and then he goes all out to a fairly stunned silence from the audience, and his co-host essentially making faces after it all. Kotaku says it was a brief but critical moment, especially since the Game Awards host Jeff Keighley was criticized for refusing to overtly name names in December, and then Mr. Miller takes credit for that. Miller told Kotaku via email that while he was prepared to debate the show's producers and writers about including such a clear critique in their speech, he not only didn't have to, but was also praised for being so upfront. It's always difficult to be humble in an interview, right? As we get closer and closer to the DICE Awards, I knew that I wanted the monologue to say something real about both NFTs and the abuse that's been allowed to run rampant in the industry. I had seen Jeff get blowback from the Game Awards for not naming names, so I was prepared to fight to get stuff like this in. As for the crowd, I don't think they expected us to go so hard. There was a usual smattering of laughs and groans, but there was the addition of stunned silence. Everyone who approached me afterwards said they loved it and stood by the message. No one told me I was wrong. Well, Greg, I'm going to tell you were wrong, because much like the statements we were just looking at with respect to Elden Ring and everything else, you fulfill a specific role in and around the gaming industry that I think is potentially problematic in this context. Or as I tweeted out, this was very brave, and I criticized the terms that were used and the way that this was presented. I said, for purposes of this tweet, the term brave means being entirely comfortable in the belief of the social acceptability of your position. I don't know of anyone on earth saying yay harassment or go Activision Blizzard at this point in time. So very, very controversial thing you did. And that the target of your ire has lost the power to damage you either socially or professionally, right? So this happens February 24th, give or take. And as we know, Activision has a pending transaction with Microsoft at this very moment. A pending transaction that they didn't have back in December when Jeff Keighley was hosting the Game Awards. So going out there, giving Kotaku a very heartwarming, very humble interview quotes about how you wanted to get out there and stand for something when Jeff, realistically, you're throwing under the bus a little bit, didn't do that in December of last year, all with the knowledge that, as the Wall Street Journal has reported here, as we've reported in Virtual Legality, Bobby Kotick is very likely out in a very short period of time after Microsoft purchases Activision and doesn't have, realistically, any of the power that he looked to have at the end of last year. The other problems with it, of course, being that it's self-aggrandizing. And if you look at this clip, which I will link in the description to this video as I do this whole Twitter thread that I made, there's a certain amount of glee that he uses to swear at an individual in this particular case. Now, it's easy enough for us here to sit back and say, Bobby Kotick's a bad person. But to be fully honest, that has a number of problems associated with it. First of all, we weren't in any of these rooms. We don't know Bobby Kotick. Maybe one of you that listens to this episode or views it does know Bobby Kotick. Maybe you can leave a comment letting us know. Absolutely. But we don't know Bobby Kotick. Seems for all the world like he's got certain issues and that a lot of ire is perhaps validly addressed at him. But we don't actually know. And the secondary problem with that is it confuses a complicated issue. Right, Activision Blizzard has its own problems. There is no question about that. But when we talk about those problems at Activision Blizzard, it is terribly useful and myopic to actually say only that this was Bobby Kotick. This was the head of the dragon. This is a company that has thousands and thousands of employees. And if the stories are as we have been told, if the state of California's lawsuit and the EEOC complaints are accurate, remembering, of course, that none of these complaints have been fully litigated at this point in time, then that is a systematic failure of a company with, yes, potentially a bad leader. But by just lowering it to that kind of standard, you're effectively getting everything off the hook, right? You're letting a company with a complicated issue that maybe has these systemic problems be reduced to one man that if you cut the head off of, everything will be okay. And realistically, I think Microsoft taking on Activision and potentially making cultural changes could well work, could be useful. But we are lying to ourselves if we don't think that if there is rot in Activision Blizzard, it's deep in its pores and is not limited to solely the CEO and face of a company. It shows a certain lack of insight as to how corporations' cultures go wrong in a context that is facing the game industry as reported on nationally and in this kind of self-aggrandizing fashion. It's exactly the same problem we were talking about with respect to the Elden Ring developers. Or as I continue in this thread, the industry so desires to move up the entertainment legitimacy ladder to not be seen as merely for children, and honestly, it deserves to, right? I don't know if anybody remembers, but the Spike TV Awards days, or even before then, the way video gaming was treated is essentially something you do on your own, in the dark, in a basement. You don't talk to anybody about it because, frankly, it's embarrassing. And as the gaming industry continues to move up in revenue, that goes away a little bit, but it slides down a notch every single time this kind of thing happens. And I would see it not do that. Or as I say here, until every major public-facing event ceases to look like it's run by children, it's simply not going to happen. I think anytime you were trying to project sincerity for an important position, and I think being against harassment, being for the respectfulness of every developer and every employee and every person working so hard to make the games we love is an enormously important position, it's best not to look gleeful at the opportunity to self-aggrandize and say bad words. Generally speaking, I'd also avoid attacking named individuals, no matter how self-righteous it might feel, for exactly the reasons I've already talked about in this video. It reduces a complicated problem to something simple. And also, you don't really know what you don't know about the story here, regardless of what you might have read in a complaint, as we talk about in Virtual Legality, on and on and on. In other words, I don't really have an issue with reflecting on things if desired, and we'll get back to this parenthetical I have here in just a second, but there are ways to do it professionally. In short, no one doesn't know who you are talking about. So you are simply playing to the cheap seats and your Patreon. Good for you, I suppose, but it diminishes both the event and the industry. Then we have Mike Drucker, a developer himself, say, I wrote this joke and I'm very happy that Game Over Greggy got to say it straight to the game industry at a game industry event. Inappropriate, in my opinion, not terribly useful, in my opinion, and ultimately diminishing of the industry and the participants in it in the same way we started this video off with in a different controversial standpoint. But here we say, okay, maybe Greg Miller didn't write it, But he certainly took credit for it with Kotaku. And so regardless of who's responsible, whether it's Mike Drucker, Greg Miller, the people that hired them both, or some other force behind the DICE Awards, we continue to look at an industry that is very, very far from being mature and actually evidencing the ability to grow beyond that kind of childish mentality. And I would very much see it grow beyond that, right? As we talked about, this is a complicated issue. We've got Microsoft stepping in to purchase Activision. We've got a whole host of things that have happened at Activision that aren't just about Bobby Kotick, all of which are worthy of discussion. And perhaps more interestingly in this context, it's that the DICE Awards themselves, in which we just watched Greg Miller's introduction or spoke about it, is awarding a Lifetime Achievement Award to that very same Phil Spencer that is in charge of gaming at Microsoft. And if we look at the summary here, we'll see how you should represent the gaming industry. And believe me when I say, I am not a cult of personality type person. I think that Phil Spencer has said and done things that are worthy of critique. I have critiqued them here at Virtual Legality. I don't really love that people just think that he's God's gift to gaming. I think he's got a lot of resources behind him, and that's always terribly useful. But he does know how to speak like an adult in the room on important issues. Or here, as SVG summarizes, Bethesda director Todd Howard introduced Spencer, comparing him to Superman and stating that he's used his superpowers for good to make the world a better place through video games. Amusing from Todd Howard and Bethesda, who of course made a ton of money from Phil Spencer's decision-making only last year. Spencer said that players need to stop weaponizing the games they love and start being more accepting of each other. Our responsibility is simple. Do everything possible to ensure that this entire industry is about treating every single person with dignity and respect. We fall short when we fail to provide a safe and inclusive environment for every person who works in our industry. We fall short when we tolerate abuse. And that's, in my opinion, the right way to address these kinds of issues, especially when you don't know the legalities of all these situations. They have yet to be borne out. And frankly, if you're in Microsoft's shoes, you can't really talk about them because you are potentially buying into all of those liabilities in the future. But this is the appropriate way to discuss these things. And yet, Phil Spencer isn't above reproach here, right? You've got the DICE Awards, you've got Greg Miller, you've got Mike Drucker or whoever else trying to aggrandize themselves, trying to speak truth to the power of the gaming industry, all the while at an award show functioning on behalf of that industry, and one where they give a Lifetime Achievement Award to the man that won't tolerate abuse, but will, after the Wall Street Journal knocks your stock price down enough, come to you with a bag in open arms and say, hey, would you like to get paid? We'll give you a nice soft landing to get that done for you. So you can certainly frame Microsoft's purchase of Activision as providing an unearned soft landing, especially if you're on the F. Bobby Kotick side of the equation. And yet these complicated factors are reduced to this kind of thing by what amounts to YouTubers with a Patreon or community support system trying to make themselves look good after the danger has passed. And to be honest, I just don't respect that kind of approach. I don't respect the kind of approach we saw from these various developers against Elden Ring. There are constructive ways to have these conversations. We saw them from Phil Spencer. Hopefully, we see them from folks like myself trying to use Twitter for good, as difficult as that particular platform makes it, and not just out there pitching my Patreon. On that note, this channel is supported by Patreon. If you enjoy the conversations we've been having in the respective business and law, and of course, our Virtual Legality Extras, please consider supporting us. We can't do it without subscribers like you. You like that transition? In any event, we are supported by Patreon. Thank you so much again to Opal Studded Dagger for supporting this particular conversation in this space. But if you don't want to support us that way, just subscribe, tell your friends, ring bells, upvote, downvote, not to aggrandize me, but to get the message that Virtual Legality is out here, hopefully having constructive, educational, informational, and entertaining conversations about the stuff that you and I already love and love to follow. If you caught this on YouTube, thank you so much for watching. And if you listen to it as a podcast, thank you so much for listening. And I will catch you on the very next episode of Virtual Legality. Virtual Legality is a YouTube video series with audio podcast versions presented as commentary and for education and entertainment purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice and does not create an attorney-client relationship. If you have legal questions about the topics discussed, please consult your own legal counsel.